Hey, welcome to Second Wind Women. I'm here today with Jenny Cohen. Jenny is the creator of the Spotlight Confidence Formula. And she transforms fear into magnetic self-trust and leadership. She is an award-winning dancer turned global movement expert, and she's a multi-time number one international best-selling author and host of the top 10% ranked Dance to Heal podcast. I got flushed even when I said that. Dance to Heal. That's amazing. Welcome, Jenny.
Thank you for having me, Karen. So excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm so excited for you to be here too. Tell us a little bit about your journey and where you started out and how you ended up becoming this, I mean, Dance to Heal. What better message could there be, right? You got the music, you got the movement, you get the whole thing. So where did you start out and how did things progress for you?
Well, surprisingly, I didn't dance a lot as a child. I think for me, part of my message and movement that I want the world to start to reclaim is the birthright to dance. We start to be conditioned as we get a little older and put in our first movement classes as children about structure instead of an emphasis on play and dance. Mm-hmm. And there's a powerful tool. It helps us intuitively start to listen to the language of our bodies. Most dancers do always learn that skill, even if they're in higher end levels of performance like ballet or their performance company. There mm-hmm. is an aspect of it that most of us muggles, as adult learners, when we find it again, we have to relearn.
Yeah.
You know, recently, even now, I started dancing. I about 9 years old when I convinced my mother to let me go into one ballet semester. Mm-hmm. And she allowed me that. And then I didn't really continue until high school where it was an elective. And I still remember my first teacher. Her name was Ruth Levine. And she opened up the doors of being able to connect with my body in a way that felt safe. Even though, of course, let's just be really honest, there are setups in certain dance formats where we're taught not to trust our own perspective, and we're learning from teachers or ballet masters, right, who are convincing us that you're the wrong body type, or you have to do it my way or the highway. Mm-hmm. For me, though, Ruth Levine epitomized the teacher who just wanted you to move and feel the joy of it. And I did ballet with her in modern, and then in college, I delved a little bit into classes. I got to take classes with actually Will and Grace. Deborah Messing was in one of my classes at college.
Cool.
Super cool. We did dance choreography. And then I really didn't hit my stride until I graduated and I was working in New York City taking classes at Broadway Dance Center mm-hmm. with dance majors, most of them from Asian countries, where the 1 hour and 30 minute class that would kill me after a full day of work was the warm up for the dance majors before they went into the curriculum. And I realized, ooh, there's a golden nugget here for adult learners that we lost track of when we grew up.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right? The connection between mind and body. Even now, science is showing that the organ of your heart, which is also referred to as their second brain, there's more messages coming from your heart to your mind, your brain, than your brain to your heart. Yeah. Which means that there's a plethora of things that we have complete access to in our bodies if we would just listen to what it's saying.
Yeah, you know, I have a friend that I went to college with, and she's always on social media, and she does this stuff where she's like, you know, does all this like flipping around, and I'm always see it, and I'm like, oh, you know, that's just her doing her thing. It's like amazing, right? And then one day I was like, oh, I'm gonna try it today, and I was like, oh, now I understand why she keeps doing this and why she's so like adamant about it, because we're so like, okay, now we're going to type, and then we walk over. Don't wiggle too much because somebody will think something about you. And embodiment. I mean, that's the whole basis of the whole somatic therapy movement, right?
Yes.
So what did you major in college? It wasn't dance?
Oh, that wasn't unheard of. I'm 57. And back in those days, there was no acceptability of the art. What is the arts? And I don't think there's a word for it back then. They might have come up with word
really?
For it now. It was tolerated. It wasn't
Yeah.
It's an extra, right? If you really wanted to do the arts, you had to become a proficient piano player or a violinist. The ultimate goal being that you would become a lawyer or a doctor in the future. That was non-negotiables in my generation. So it wasn't until college and afterwards that I started to take classes. My majors were psychology, and then my master's degree was in occupational therapy.
Oh, wow.
So that's my background in terms of...
I mean, kind of fits though, right?
Absolutely. I know how to help someone get to their focus and their goal. I help you break it down. I may not know how to do it. My kids are junior Olympians for rhythmic gymnastics. So they have gold and silver medals from that, coming off the Olympics, right?
Wow.
And there's a lot of training that goes into it, a lot of skill breakdown, a lot of learning for... I was one of their coaches. So I cannot do a cartwheel still. My kids were doing crazy stunts with all these apparatuses, and I had to help them find ways to train because they were called late bloomers, and actually they were considered no future, and they still ended up, you know, going to Junior Olympics because there was a secret sauce, and some of that was mindset training, an athletic mindset training that people, if they need that, I can provide it. However, the biggest thing is being able to map out what you want to achieve in a way that your body could follow. So there are certain levels of training where you're visualizing because you've done it before, so you know what feels good when it's correct and what feels off, and you're going to miss that catch after a triple somersault. And so the mind practice mindset is to visualize it, and then your body feels like it's done it, or your brain will register it as a rep. Right? And so if you were to correlate to regular people like us in terms of just trying to set up a self-care day, because most of us, what's a self-care day? We don't even know how to define that.
It means a bath at the end of the day. That's
right.
It.
Yeah. Right. And it's essential, especially for women and men also over 40. We're all hitting what's called in Chinese traditional medicine our second spring, where there's an inward turning of energy because we're not raising kids anymore. We're shifting into longevity focus. And it's really important that we actually then allow ourselves those mornings of self-care. Are you taking your supplements? Did you even look at how much sleep you got? And was it a good sleep? Because all of that will affect our health in the long term.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Wow. You're giving me lots of directions to go with. So are you, so you do some kind of visualization coaching as far as athletics, right? Or is that just something you did for your kids?
That's something I did for my kids that it becomes applicable for those of us who aren't necessarily going for Olympics. We do. I want to acknowledge that everyone behind the scenes, we have Olympic lives. Everybody has crazy lives, right? Yeah. And we don't have to be out in the spotlight to realize it takes a lot of effort for us to stay very focused on our task and not leave out self-care. That's super important.
Yeah.
And some of the things that I use for their training is applied to my clients.
So you said something about planning a self-care day. What did you mean exactly by that? I mean, we talked a little bit, you know, we were a little snarky about about what that means normally. But what did you mean by that?
I'm referring to the permission to actually give yourself 45 minutes to an hour of self-care in the morning that's not rushed.
Okay.
And sometimes for some of us, you already have the skeleton of it. And some of us listening to this podcast interview are like, what are you talking about? I'm lucky if I could brush my teeth, maybe apply, splash some liquid on my face. I don't know if it's water or coffee. It doesn't matter. And and then apply some, maybe sunblock. I heard that's good for you. And that's really all it is. And I'm inviting listeners to just stop for a second and ask your body, am I giving you enough self-care in the morning? Most likely the answer is no. Because we've never been given permission, nor made aware that there's a lack.
Right.
We think self-care is breakfast or making sure that you do a workout. And I'm saying my self-care. I wake up in the morning and I do some exercises because most people don't know when you wake up, your brain floods with cortisol to wake you up. That's part of the wake-up.
I'm very aware because now it's the only time I have hot flashes. When I wake up. Yeah.
Right. Well, there are ways to decrease cortisol levels immediately. Somatic exercises, which I provide my clients. Second thing, I have physical therapy exercises that realign my pelvis, then from there, it affects my leg length. It affects my posture, which is where your brain sits on top of. So physically, how you are aligned will affect your perspective of the day. And I did not know that for most of my life, I had a sacroiliac misalignment in my hip for most of my life. And if you find it later, which most of us do, it's an SI injury, you need to do that maintenance every day. It's just, it's self-care. I do a full stretch, which also includes releasing tension in my hips, which most of us carry tension in our hips. There's right. a lot of memory we carry in an abdominal section. And it's really important we give ourselves time for that. During that time, I'm doing energy release techniques that I show my clients that have to talk about you align with what's your truth now, not your truth from the past, not your truth and passion for the future. Just where are you now? Connect with yourself now. Then after that is when I brush my teeth and wash my face and do a full face care, because right. that's when you're looking at yourself in the mirror and going, I'm really worth this time. Yeah. Thank you, body. I woke up again. This is fantastic. I'm looking forward to the day. Yeah. Right. Then there's journaling and these essential energy drops. And right. And I give myself permission. Now, here's the thing. I never realized that I was giving myself permission to do it. And I was doing it under a time clock. I'd be like, if you don't get this done in 30 minutes in my head, I didn't even realize I was counting down. And I had a conversation with my therapist and she's like, Jenny, did you give yourself permission you may not take it all. To have a 90-minute of self-care morning. I was like, heck no. I came up with a routine. This is fantastic. Now, it's
to
really
the minute. To the minute.
The minute. And I realized, whoa, I do this for my clients and I didn't do it for myself. So there yeah. is this thing where we'll say to ourselves, oh, I know that. And there is an accountability sometimes. If you find a mesh with a coach who can work with you, there's no shaming, no guilting, just someone that you would trust that keeps you on par. Mm-hmm. With goals you set for yourself. Now, after my morning routines, I'm a really clear channel for my clients, for my family, for my husband, for my friends. I'll get calls from friends. I had a friend who called me the other day. She wanted to start up a crochet thing. And I came up with an idea for her that's going to take off for her business. Mm-hmm. I just clicked and I went, why don't you try this? She went, oh my God, Jenny. I was like, I know. Get on this. I'm not going to tell you all because she's going to launch her business. But
yeah.
Right. So we want to be that way. And I noticed I used to buy things based on FOMO, fear of missing out. When I'm really clear, I know this is not for me right now. I might make a note of it in my never ending notes in my phone or a screenshot. But that's as far as it goes, instead of buying and buying and or feeling like I have to sign up or being in rooms that I'm not really appreciated or even noted. I've let a lot of that fall out of the way because I'm really centered and clear with what's for me. And I want that for you and everybody
yeah.
else.
Yeah, I really like that. And it's such a divergence from the hustle culture, you know, wake up at 5 a.m. and have worked out and done all your stuff and be actually like driving to work by, you know, 6:15 in the morning. And I think that a lot of that hustle culture really perpetuates this, I'm buying a lot of stuff. Because you wake up and you're literally rolling out of bed. You're rolling through your whole day without stopping to like center.
Yeah. And sometimes the centering, for some of us listening, 3 minutes, that's all you need.
Mm.
And we make these impossible things. I know some listeners are thinking, well, whoa, she got all these things done. That took me 5 years to get since the 2020 panini. I called the pandemic lockdown the panini.
I like
and,
it.
Right? Mm-hmm. Well, I call it the panini because my whole family, I have 2 cancer survivors, 1 autoimmune disease, 1 celiac, nut allergies. We are really careful not to just even get the flu because it'll take us out. Mm-hmm. We'll end up in the hospital. I have a son with type 1 diabetes. It's just a little complicated.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, since the 2020 lockdown, I've been trying to come up with a self-care routine. And I would say it's successful now. And I've been really, it took me a lot of finding different things to put together. So everyone has their own unique morning routine. I know everyone just wants me to give it to you. your body doesn't want that. Like you, I'm sorry. Like I tried that for years. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. Take someone else's morning routine, it would never fit.
Right.
I would get a rebound effect where I would be a blob for a few days because my body didn't like it. It wasn't formulated for me like it would be for you.
Right.
And then things shift too, right? Because if you're a young mom versus a young person who's not married with no partners, right? But you might have a lot of cats. Those are different schedules than a mom, right?
Yeah.
Than
yeah.
someone who's retired. Or if you come from certain cultures, because certain cultures hold certain things very important. And you want to start being really clear about what parts of your culture you want to integrate and what parts are just no longer serve who you are today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 I never have a problem with the slow morning. For me, it's the opposite. I'm like, oh, I should meditate for 45 minutes and then I should journal for half an hour and then I should make myself some coffee and write up my plans for the day. And then I'm like, oh my gosh, it's already 11 a.m.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, the thing is, though, some of that is for me, I will get lost in the actual activity, in which case then I have certain things that I'll queue up. Like my phone goes off on the hour, except when I'm in an interview with you, to remind myself to get present, because I didn't realize how little I was present until yeah. I started doing the routines and realized, whoa, this lasts maybe a couple hours. And then I have things set up in my calendar to keep me present.
That's like the Pomodoro thing, which I keep saying that I should do, because there's a name for it. It's any task will expand to fill the time allotted to it.
Yes, yes, right. And what I've noticed is, if I used to do the artist's way,
mm-hmm,
the 3-page journals, I tried it for 2 years, and it was, oh, I got to fill 3 pages. I never set a limit. So those 3 pages started getting longer and longer and longer and longer and longer. Mm-hmm. I get distracted, do some chores, come back and still try and finish those 3 pages. Instead of you know what? You're just going to do a dump for 20 minutes.
Right, right.
Even if you write the same word over and over again.
Yeah. Right?
And you want to figure out rules that work for you.
Yeah, it's funny because I tried to do the artist's way too, and I was young at the time, and there was an artist's way group, and I went, and everybody there was like 60 or over, and they were all like, oh, in the mornings I do this and that. I was like, this must be for retired people, but you're right.
Well, I have a journal, and I ended up, my morning journaling is writing out my life affirmations.
Mm-hmm.
So like my life affirmations, and I do energy clearing over the statements, because a lot of us don't even realize we have like little hiccups about certain words or certain letters or certain numbers.
Really?
Yes. Huh. Because there was stress in learning when we were little and the adults around us didn't know that. So we carry that stress with us. So I have affirmations that I clear energy on every morning. Like, you know, so for me, like my first line is, I am anointed, beloved, blessed, heard, held, seen, supported, and radiant. That's my first sentence.
Oh, nice.
And I had to separately write them, say them in clear energy in the way I said it, mm-hmm. and how it felt in my body, and the way I wrote it, and how I wrote, like how I saw it. And then I had to clear energy on how I read it in my mind. There's so many different levels that we don't even understand that we have hiccups on when we're growing up.
Yeah, and the more that you align yourself with something, the more it flows, right? Like when I read your introduction, I was a little bit like, because I wasn't familiar with the words, but you've said those words over and over again. If you said it, they would just be.
Yeah, yeah. And again, I don't know if I'll use those same words next year.
Yeah.
I'm not married to it, right? The routine that I shared with you about my whole morning routine, I'm not married to it. I do it. I've habit stacked a lot of things on top of each other. But 4 of the things I shared with you were shifted in the last month. I was doing them all, but in different orders. And all of a sudden I went, ooh, when I'm doing my PT exercise and I have to lie still and I'm really distracted and I want to go on my phone, I'll do my energy clearing. I just shifted 2 things on top of each other.
When you make adjustments is when you notice that like they're not exactly working the way you want or that something has shifted?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. Because your needs will shift also, even for me, because I have a membership where it was all used to be live classes, and then people could have access to the recording. And one morning during one of my morning routines, I got a download. You know, most of your people are just doing recordings. No one wants to go on live because it's two different time zones.
Yeah.
Right? And there's a stress to showing up online. Like, I acknowledge this. I really have my camera on when I log on Zooms because there's an energy suck in that.
Yeah.
Right?
You have to be like,
Well, like, you know, I got to put on makeup and lipstick, and I don't want to do that sometimes. I mean, the filter is amazing, but I also don't want to be like that sometimes.
Yeah.
And also, if I'm learning, I really want to focus on the teacher. And yeah, I have cats running in the space, people running through. I don't want people distracted by my screen going off. So I've noticed, though, that I got to download, you know, just pre-record the four classes for the month. People will buy those.
So much better.
I got that download. My audience, I had like one person, but I didn't, I had a conversation. She wasn't going to renew anyway. So then why am I still doing live classes? Right? So it was really, really interesting. I was like, oh, okay. Versus, you know, for some people who are trying to build their second wind, right? We're looking outward to other people for answers.
Right.
Yes. And sometimes it gets to a point you're getting too many suggestions. And it's time to pull back.
Yeah.
Work on the outside of your body first. Get yourself really centered. Sleeping, drinking. Like, enough hydration, super important. We don't understand that. We really don't. We really need to hydrate. Mm-hmm. But not with caffeine, like actual fluids.
Right. Yeah.
Right. And then also being aware that some of us have lost the ability to absorb hydration.
Yeah. Yeah. Talk a little bit about that. Because, yeah, I know that I started doing the keto diet thing. And one of the things they say is to put salt in your water to keep your electrolytes balanced. So I always put salt in my water now. And I know it's weird, but
I think it
makes the water feel wetter.
I'm so glad you brought this up. I had breast cancer back in 2014 and didn't realize that the chemotherapy that I went on destroyed my gut health. So, and also the radiation on top of it affects your body's overall health ability to retain nutrients.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until I had the download in the last year and a half that I started doing liquid IV, the sugar-free or Pedialyte sugar-free. Because for me, after I got cancer, there's no history of cancer. My mom got breast cancer after I got breast cancer.
Hmm.
I was at my healthiest at that time in 2014, my healthiest. I had been working out vegan diet for about 8 months, eight months of getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning through the snow. We were in New Jersey, driving to the gym, working out with people who didn't talk to me. I know I didn't talk to them back. Like, we're just like getting through that 45 minutes of workout.
Yeah.
I was fit. I was strong, I thought. Right. And then I got cancer. And it just bowled me over. And the only research I could find was that, you know, Asians don't have a lot of dairy in our diet. And so I've cut out like whey protein, no milk, no cheese. Mm-hmm. Everything is non-dairy for me. And then recently added gluten-free because I come from Taiwan. We didn't really have a lot of wheat back then. It's a Western influence of having wheat products.
Yeah.
And cheese and milk weren't something we really have in our diet.
Right.
And then I realized, oh, but there's something else. What was it? It was non-resolved trauma from my childhood that it had accumulated into me getting breast cancer. Because around the time of my breast cancer, my husband was very sick.
Mm-hmm.
And it was 4 years after my son was diagnosed with type 1, so I hadn't slept in 4 years. That's another thing, right?
Yeah.
Anyways, so 2 years ago, I got this download. Hey, guess what? Your cancer treatment, you're going to need help. Because I would drink a gallon of water and not feel hydrated.
Mm-hmm.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then I started adding in liquid IV sugar-free because I really can't tolerate the sugar. Like, it makes you pre-diabetic, type 2, not type 1. And Pedialyte, which I was drinking a lot of, has milk in it, whey proteins.
What?
To help you absorb. That's a chemical thing. If you're really dehydrated and you drink regular Pedialyte, there's whey proteins in it to help you uptake the hydration. But I'm trying to be no dairy. That's a precursor to my cancer, you know, more probability. However, sugar-free Pedialyte has no whey protein in it. Like, you got to do your research.
Uh-huh.
I started reading a lot more labels and went, oh, I can have the sugar-free Pedialyte and I can have the sugar-free liquid IV. So then I noticed, oh, my recovery is faster now when I drink with those hydrations. And then afterwards, I go to the warm water in the evenings.
Right.
And then my body's taking it all in. And like, you know, so sorry to get TMI with your audience. Like the regular poos happen better when I'm hydrated because your body needs that.
Yeah.
Right. Including like fiber intake. Those two things are really important as we age. Increases our intestinal health inside.
Your peristalsis, like, talk about graphic. Your peristalsis slows down, right, as you age.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I realized the healthy idea of salads does not work for me. I'm Asian. I like my veggies to be cooked.
Yeah.
Sorry, like, I just can't even, I had to move completely away from the healthy idea of salads. And now we have a Chinatown here in Salt Lake City, and we go to Chinatown Market, and it's cheaper. It reduced our groceries by $200 a week.
Yeah.
And we just buy a ton of Chinese vegetables and cook those up, and I'm really happy with my chicken breast, Chinese vegetables, white rice, which is my food of my culture that worked well for me.
Yeah.
Right? Working out only three times a week, strength training, and that's enough. And I dropped 10 pounds in the last 7 months.
Oh, wow.
Right?
Wow.
And I didn't, you know how much working out I was doing before, y'all? Like, seriously? Thinking that wasn't that. And then, because, you know, absorption, folks, it's very, very different for each and every one of us. So we have to also look at your hormones levels as we're aging. I went into chemo-induced menopause at 45, not knowing that menopause causes a lot of problems in your body. Nobody tells us that.
Yeah.
I did not know. I did not know that it was going to lead to pretty severe osteoporosis in my back, my neck, and then recently in my hips. I'm a dancer. I can't break a hip, folks. It's not going to happen.
No.
So then I had to think about, hormone replacement. I have hormone-positive breast cancer. Doctors saying, no. And I'm going, yes, because I have a higher chance of dying from a hip fracture than having cancer.
Yeah, that's once you get immobilized, I think you can go downhill really quick.
The stats now coming out, for every 10 women that get a hip fracture, 3 of us die.
What?
3 of us never recover fully. 3 out of 10 women will die from a hip fracture.
Crazy.
That is related to osteoporosis.
Wow.
Yeah. So now there's a higher push for women to understand. We have every right to ask our doctors to check our hormone levels and be increasing T levels, estrogen levels, progesterone levels, because all of that is healthy things for our brain that if we start to decrease, we don't know what's affecting us.
Yeah.
Right. And all of that has been wrapping to get me right back on track of where I really needed to be, 57. Versus being in menopause at 45.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow.
Right? But I never would, if I hadn't started listening that there was something missing, I wouldn't have started doing research.
Yeah.
And then
there's so many variables. Like, you have to really be serious about it, you know, to figure out what's going on.
Yes. I think it's just being open. If you're open to things that are presenting themselves and you are really checked in with yourself. There is applied kinesiology, which is called, another word is muscle testing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. And they're showing that it's very useful once you start to practice it, where you can ask your body things and be like, is this good for me to look into or is this not for me now? Because literally I was relying on that for going back on hormones.
Mm-hmm.
Because my oncologist was kind of like, we don't really recommend you do that. I'm like, yeah. But you didn't tell me that I was going to get osteoporosis in my hips. That was going, you know, because they even put me on these Prolia shots to increase bone density. They're $4,000 twice a year.
Oh, my gosh. That's crazy.
I mean,
thank God we have them, but still.
How does anyone live? Right. Yeah. With this is the aftermath of being saved, like having my life saved from breast cancer.
Right. Right.
Right. So it becomes if you really truly listen to your body, it's not so much your brain going, oh, this is what I need, but really ask your body and learn to listen when it says, no, thank you. Like, this is not for us right now. Or please do this. Please do the jumping and the strength training to increase your bone density. Please don't do this, which was, I think for me, it was like jump roping. We don't want that, but we want the jumping.
Yeah. jumping, right?
For me, it was just more prone to injuries, right? Yeah. Or even for me recently, my T levels had gotten a little bit higher. And at the time I asked myself, like, is this good? And the answer through muscle testing was, yes, it is good. And then Karen, I asked again recently, and the answer was, no, we want to go back lower. We don't like this high level of T.
Huh.
And I was like, oh, well, you just said it was fine like 4 months ago. What do you mean?
Be consistent.
Yeah, because the thing is, life is never the same. Things are shifting, right?
Yeah.
You're getting to a certain level of something. Unfortunately, I just had a doctor on one of my podcast episodes, and like, they're human too. They're not going to be able to look in a crystal ball and get the answers for you, unfortunately. Right. I'm so sorry, folks. You really have the answers, but you need to ask.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you say something about applied kinesiology and dancing to heal your body? Because I feel like there's a natural kind of connection there that we don't often hear people talk about. They're usually like, very separate, you know?
It is very separate. And I want to define, when I say dance to heal, please remember we're not referring to ballet or performance arts, which is a whole nother world, folks. They're going through some renovations themselves about classist paradigms where, you know, you have to be a certain body type, a certain skin color, a certain affluence to be able to perform on stage doing certain things unless you make your own stage, right? We're not talking about that. I'm talking about your first rocking to music when you were a baby access. You know, the little thrill you get when you get out of the shower and you happen to play a really good song and you're like walking around naked in your bathroom. Not in a shower, that's dangerous, but you've dried off. You're in the bathroom, like,
no liability is assumed.
liabilities. But you're dance because I have danced naked in the shower practicing choreography. Okay, so like, I'm guilty of that. So my caveat is that you're dry on a well rubberized floor, and you get kind of, you're having fun, and you just kind of dance around, feeling free. Right, that's the dance to heal I'm referring to. That is your birthright. To move and allow your body to move to sounds you perceive as music. I have clients who like the sound of water, and that's music to them. I have clients that like the sound of bird song, and birds are universal sound of safety. If you notice that, like every single horror movie, no matter what language, right? If the forest is full of bird sounds, everyone's happy, but the birds go silent. It's a little dangerous. Something's about to happen, right? So whatever you perceive as music is then your time to move. I'm doing a challenge now on social media, the daily connect with your body. It's like a trust connection where you put on a song and you dance freely to it. You have the option to record because you want to learn to give yourself Care Bear eyes, not always critiquing how badly you are, but to look at the wonder of your movement.
Oh, Care Bear eyes. Oh,
Care Bear stare is what we call it. Yeah. And so because when I was training to be a teacher, we were asked to learn to turn the Care Bear stare on ourselves, and then we could show our own students how we give ourselves that love so they could show it to themselves when they were growing as movers, right?
Yeah.
And that's what we want to do for ourselves outside of this public eyeball. Your own eyeballs must see yourself in a loving way. But that's a learned muscle, Karen.
Yeah.
That's a very learned muscle.
There's a lot of pushback from the world about that.
Yes. And the world isn't what we need to worry about. It's the internalized world in you that you didn't even realize was happening. So oftentimes we have critiquers inside of us that we brought into ourselves that we're not aware of. Like, I did not realize until I started doing the work, I always have a critic, and it was my mother's voice. Mm-hmm. But I'm so used to it. If I say negative thing to myself when I look in the mirror, right, and I think it's just, oh, I'm fixing something. But it's really my mom's voice saying, oh, you don't look good from that side, that angle. Or, whoa, did you gain a little bit of weight under your brow line? And I'd be like, wait, I look wonderful. Why am I stressed about a little natural human bulge from my brow line? But it's because that's my mother's fear that she projected onto me and I took in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just be aware of that as we hit the second part of our lives or you're pivoting in a new direction. You don't want to bring that old stuff with you.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy enough to come up with it on your own, but then when you have it from the outside, it really reinforces the inside, you know?
Yeah. Sometimes it's the outside. It's not us. Like, babies don't say to themselves, oh, I'm too fat.
So much cellulite.
I mean, that's the epitome of the baby being able to grow up and yeah. live for the next week. Baby's supposed to be round and juicy, right? And then somehow little girls and little boys are made to feel, oh, you're too round. You're too juicy. No. You need to be extra. How do you stretch into taller bodies without the at? Have you noticed when we have kittens, we foster kittens, mm-hmm. and kittens, they kind of get a little rounder before they get a little bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And yeah. that's normal for us.
My kids too.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And somehow we were decided, oh, that comes from us. Actually, it came from the surroundings around us, and we just internalized it. And it's time to be like, hey, no, thank you. Like, the original me loved life and loved me, and that part has to come back.
Yeah. You know, I saw this really funny, speaking of this, I saw a video on like Instagram or something this morning, and it was some grandma, like, you're always on that phone. You're always on the, and like yelling at, anything that was wrong with this person, they were saying, you're always on that phone. But I was thinking about, and I've made a practice of often, not right now, but often turning off my self view when I'm on video calls with people, because otherwise I'm just looking at myself and critiquing myself, right? And I thought about, you know, 100 years ago, now, okay, maybe 200 years ago, most people didn't even have mirrors.
No, they didn't.
And now we're looking at ourselves constantly.
Constantly. Or putting ourselves in imaginary situations that we could never even physically be in, right? Because of AI, right? And so, you know, I'm going to answer the second part of your question about the dance to heal and the applied kinesiology, right? There are ways you can ask yourself, is this for me or is this not for me? Like, I do a lot of muscle testing already. So sometimes I already know the answer, but I'll still ask myself to back up. So let me first explain what applied kinesiology is.
Okay.
They used to, when it first showed up, it was just a way of asking the body through a muscle test. Most normally the deltoid shoulder muscle, where a person, the tester, would come up to the person they want to find out something and be like, hey, is this blah, blah? It's always a yes or no question.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would put a hand on the forearm or the upper arm and try and push down on the arm of the person being tested. If it's a yes or a positive, the arm usually stays strong. If it's a negative or no, the arm tends to become weaker. Even if the person's trying to hold it up, it will get they'll be able to push the arm down. Okay. They've been researching this particular muscle test on, for example, if someone has an SI injury or misalignment in that joint, which is like your butt bone, your butt back, like the back of your butt.
Sacroiliac, right? Yes.
Yeah, it's where the tailbone extends up and where your pelvic bones meet with the sacrum. That mm-hmm. area, if it's misaligned, causes a lot of pain for most of us. We never know. Most of us think we have leg length and discrepancies. It's actually because that joint is misaligned. It's either the push forward and the pelvis is twisted. Uh-huh. And this specific PT exercise to realign everything in there. Now, here's the thing. If you're used to it being misaligned, it takes a while to get it realigned and then your body to keep that.
Right.
Okay. But now they did a research study where they were like, oh, instead of doing a PT test to see if that SI joint was out of alignment, they would do a muscle test. Is this person's SI joint out of alignment? And there was a 70% accuracy.
That's very good.
They didn't ask a person to say yes or no. They just tested the body and the body. So 7 out of 10 people were like, yeah, or no, I'm fine. And it would be accurate with the actual physical test. Okay. So for me, once I am attuned in the dance to heal stuff, which is, for example, improvisation to music, where your mind isn't saying, oh, I think I should do this to this music. You're actually giving your body intuitive decisions. Mm-hmm. To how your body wants to move to the music. Right. And then that translates into when you ask your body questions and yes or no format, your body then will answer you. So you can do a truth test first. Different ways to do it. You could stand up and push on your arm. Someone could push on your arm. Or you can stand up and do like a leaning forward or backward exercise where you'll be like, oh, my name is Jenny C. Cohen. And then my body will feel like it wants to lean forward, which is a yes.
Yourself as a pendulum? That's cool.
Yes, like a pendulum. Or my name is Penelope Cruz, and my body will probably lean away going, no, you're not. You may want to cosplay, but you're still not Penelope Cruz, right? Or my eyes are brown, and my body may lean forward. Like, some people have vertigo, so standing up and doing this isn't super helpful for them. Mm-hmm. Just most people, this is the easiest way to start listening to their body's intuitive forward for yes and back for no. I tend to do muscle finger testing. So you can either make a ring with your index and your pointer and your thumb. Mm-hmm. Right? And that's seam between the two fingers. And then you take the other hand and put it at the seam. And you're trying to pull through the ring, basically.
Right.
However, if it's a positive or like a truth in your body, my name is Jenny C. Cohen, I won't be able to pull through. I can really squeeze my fingers together. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, my name is Penelope Cruz. Now I'm squeezing the suckers really tight. And I'm going to be able to pull through because my body's like, no, you're not. My eyes are brown. Yes, they are.
Yeah,
my eyes are purple, even the contacts. No. I'm like, come on. No. But my mother's like, no, I'm sorry. You still got brown eyes. So there's simple yes and no's, right? So for example, if I'm doing something and someone's saying something, I'm at a talk and someone says something and I get a little reaction, I'm like, is this true for me? And sometimes it's yes or sometimes it's no. But I do a double check with myself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah.
So the whole ability to say yes or no to things is really important. Because then you can muscle test within yourself. Is this pertain to me or not? Because right. I just saw something show up on social media about people saying, oh, you know, a lot of people are mind controlling us with hypnosis and neuro-linguistic programming, and you still have to be careful in the health and wellness industry. And I'm like, yes. And I'm here to say you can always muscle test and bypass the programming of someone, if it doesn't serve you,
mm-hmm.
We have that innate ability. You just want to make that muscle stronger, though.
Right.
Because there are plenty of times before I started really listening to myself, I would rather listen to everybody else but me.
Yeah. 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 The whole, I think that's a lot more common for women because we're taught to doubt ourselves and to do things by consensus. But that really disempowers you when you're doing things by consensus.
It does. You're so right. I love that. It disempowers you when you're doing things by consensus. Yeah. I mean, for me, even a woman's permission to play, we grant everyone permission to play before we grant it for ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I just came upon this woman who, she's in New York, and she went viral for sculpting a snow mannequin. And mm-hmm. then I went back on her feed, and she's a wedding dressmaker.
Mm-hmm.
And this woman was making ice cream. She has an ice cream maker at her parents' house up somewhere else. But she lives in New York, so space is tight. She was making ice cream through that, on top of the spackling. She was just making it on her balcony.
Oh, yeah. I've seen people do that. Uh-huh.
Right? And then... For her, it was this explorative creative play, or it's just videos of her doing creek maxing, where she just videos herself just floating around and letting the current floater and spin her around in little creeks. And that was play for her. And mm-hmm. I was like, how many of us actually do that? And no wonder her posts are going viral, because people want to be able to do that. They just will live vicariously through her. And I'm like, no, you can fill up a bathtub and just float in your bathtub.
Yeah.
The bath, yeah. The whole idea of, oh, the bath with the bubbles and the reading. What play can you make of it?
Right.
Yeah. Versus enforced relaxation. That doesn't work for me. A lot of us equate relaxation with, that's when I'm sick.
Lethargy. I do. Like, if I sit in the bath, I'm not finding that, like, satisfying in the same way that play or dance or even a walk through the park would be. It's not It's more like, okay, here's your prescription. Lie down, just rest.
And right?
It's like being on bed rest. You're like, oh.
It's enforced rest, it almost feels like. And so my body's not on board with it. I actually get a trauma response. I remember being in yoga training and not understanding why I would have an inability to control my breath because I was locked in a position. Now I'm doing another training to open up yoga that's more yin inspired, where there's a relaxation inspired with the yoga positioning, right? Mm-hmm. Versus this, like, you need to mind over matter. Your mind can control your body to hold this position, and eventually the body will give up and give you the stretch, literally. And I was like, this is the beginning of the pandemic in 2020. I mean, why am I getting an anxiety attack from this pose? And a lot of people, we don't want you to gaslight yourself. Like, this is what it's supposed to feel like because you're just too exhausted at the end of the session to have feelings. The goal is to release the feelings, right? Uh-huh. I'm confused like this. So for us, it's understanding some of us have childhood memories that get incited when we're trapped in positions. It causes a freeze response. It can cause an anxiety attack. And we don't want that. The goal is for your body to feel safe enough to understand what safety is.
And you think that's all childhood memories, or you think it's just like, you know, fight, flight, or freeze, and then you're stuck in freeze and you're like, oh, what's happening?
Childhood memories are a funny thing, okay? I'm referring to all T's, big T's, little T's, and I'm like, that's very subjective to what a big T is to someone else is a little T to someone else. Mm-hmm. No child was born with instructions. I don't care how experienced the parent was.
Right.
Every child is
totally different. Yeah.
So unique, right? And every parent goes through a little learning curve where the child could not convey, like we as children could not convey our need, and there's a little hiccup where our needs weren't met. There's no child that's ever fully met. I'm sorry. Maybe one out of millions. Okay.
Even then. Right? Yeah.
Even then. And because we are born with the innate ability to want to understand, even if you're not understanding, don't have the abilities, we will make it about us. And somehow we were in charge of it when we really were not.
Yeah.
And so the child sometimes, because we're so unique, will react in a way where we'll give ourselves a rule that we don't know we're still following as adults. That's what I mean.
Yeah, that makes sense. That all makes sense. Wow. Okay. So I did see in your intro that you were an award-winning dancer.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of dance did you do that you won awards at?
Yeah. I always wanted, and I wanted people to tell me beyond, oh, you look really good in your dance costume. I wanted to understand if my message was getting through, if my stories were understood. Did you know why? Did you feel any difference when I cut 30 seconds of this song and then mashed it with this other song and then went to this third song? And so in 2014, I entered my very first belly dance fusion competition.
Oh,
so,
yes. Belly dance fusion. Amazing.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And my particular brand is I am really inspired by hip hop and contemporary. And then I blend it with more American cabaret style dance, even though I train in a lot of Egyptian styles. Mm-hmm. Egyptian-based source teachers. And so my first competition, I won. And then that made me eligible to go to Germany in June, which I went to and then came home and found a lump in my breast. And then I got breast cancer. And then in 2015, throughout my treatment, I made my doctors crazy because I'd be like, okay, so I know chemo's this week, but I'm going to go travel to this event the following week. And they'd be like, all right, we really prefer you to not, but we can't force you not to. Because I'd be like, well, you mean
stop
medicine?
Having fun, just rest.
I'd be like, well, do you mean like I am medically not allowed to go? They're like, no, just, you know, because chemo's going to wear on you. I mean, even at one point, because I had 16 cycles of chemotherapy and I started getting severe neuropathies, meaning nerve damage in my hands and feet. Like my favorite mugs, I lost all of them because I would forget I was holding them and they would drop. And then I broke my toe because I didn't know where my foot was in space and I hit it on the wall and broke my toe. Like it felt, if I think back over then, by the time I was done with chemo, it felt like I was wearing four pairs of woolen socks that were all wrinkled. So it would hurt and feel like, ugh, not right. I couldn't really feel anything. And it got to a point, the doctors were like, hey, listen, you know, we're in cycle 12 and you have four more. But if you feel like your quality of life as a dancer is going to be affected, we can discontinue the chemo. And I was like, oh, so you mean I don't need it? They're like, no, no, you need it. But we don't want the quality of life to be affected because you're a dancer. I'm like, wait a minute. So you're telling me I could choose between having good quality of life and not seeing my kids possibly grow up?
Yeah.
Or, you know, lose all sensation in my feet and hands, but get to see my kids grow up. I'm like, bring on the chemo. What do you think I'm really going to pick, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah. But then I competed in 2015 because I felt the call to. And it was around that time I started getting standing ovations. I never got them before. I never really intended to. And I remember after I won my third title. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I was still going through infusions, a different type of chemotherapy that went on for another year for the type of cancer I had. So I'm like going to dance things and teaching. I started being asked to teach and I was starting to win competitions. And then thinking to myself, oh, for some reason in my mind, I twisted it. They just felt bad for you because you had cancer.
Did they know?
Everyone knew. I was bald for like 6 months. Oh. Like I was very open about it, but uh-huh. I didn't. Because I have friends recently in the last 5 years who got cancer and they would be bald everywhere. But I didn't do that because I knew people. I prefer to wear like hair wraps with flowers stuck all over or Halloween wigs that were crazy because it was fun. It would stay on my head, right? Mm-hmm. And for me, it wasn't about, I don't want you to keep looking and thinking I'm dying because I wasn't.
Right.
You know, I wanted to be able to rewrite that script and be like, oh no, this is a playful time. I went to chemo in a monkey onesie during Halloween. Girl. There's a photo shoot of me on the bench in front of like
amazing
hospital. Like, hello. Like I'm, you know, my very last day of chemotherapy, so number 16, I went in a bright iridescent like teal blue wig with balloons and sandwiches and cakes for the staff because it was my last day of chemo. Do you know what I mean? Wow. My last day of radiation, I had 35 treatments of the radiation. I showed up and laid everybody with a giant blow up palm tree because I was like, it's a party, y'all, that I got the winning lottery ticket that I could live through this. It sucked ass. I'm not joking, Karen. Yeah. Like chemotherapy, radiation, the surgery was freaking awful. I'm not sugarcoating it.
Right.
But my thing was, you're not going to treat me like I'm dying.
Right.
Because I'm not. I'm totally alive right now.
Well, and then part of you would believe that you were dying if you let them treat you like you were dying, right?
I literally had one girlfriend. I love her to death. And she looked at me and would not stop bawling. And I had to tell her, you can't visit me if you're going to look at me like I'm dying because I'm not. And then I had another friend who's no longer a friend who gave me permission to die. In the middle of my chemo. And I was like, you're not my family. Like, go away.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, are you serious?
I understand being supportive, but that's a little extra.
I was like, that's something my children are supposed to say to me, not you. You're not even my
family. Yeah, who are you? Yeah.
Right? So there's the one thing about cancer that's been really interesting was that I learned, because I'm an occupational therapist, and what I would do if someone needed my services would be to explain to them, listen, you need to do energy conservation mm-hmm. and then tell your friends that you're the center of the universe and you dump out. Like you can complain to your caregivers and your caregivers can complain to friends and family and your community, but no one ever dumps into the circle. So the NMR's person, your job is to get through the chemo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you energy conserve because it's going to take a lot for your body to get through the treatment and the surgeries and blah, blah, blah. And then the aftermath. And then your family needs support, but they can't dump into you, but you can dump out to them. I didn't do that. But everybody else, like you want that because then the families get supported by other family and friends and family.
Right. And but the family protects you. The family.
It's supposed to be that way. Do you know what I mean? So the dance really helped me during the treatment, Karen, and it was really helpful. And then in 2019, before the lockdown, I competed again and won again, and this time against myself because I competed in two different categories and they combined everything. So there were 10 competitors, uh-huh. and I beat out everybody. And because I was so, I don't know why, like in my mind, I convinced myself, all your wins, even the first one, that was a mistake. That was just a, so I won 4 total titles of all my competitions.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, it was really interesting.
That's so cool. I mean, and I love how you folded it all kind of in together. Yeah, that's amazing. It's not often you hear about belly dance fusion either.
Belly dance fusion is really interesting because during the lockdown, that particular dance community, we had source teachers saying we hate the name belly dance because it's not your belly, it's your pelvis, right? Mm-hmm. And then we had dancers, really established matriarchs in this country, saying, but that's what we do because it's so Americanized. We've completely bastardized it. It's not really the source dances that's inspiring it.
Yeah.
We're not going to call it Rock Sharky because, first of all, it's that, yes, yeah, there's certain like Egyptian styles called Rock Sharky because it's actually the language of the culture calling it that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then some people are like, oh, we want to call it like dance of the Oriental dance. I'm like, but I'm Asian. I hate that fucking word. Don't use that word with me.
Sounds like, little...
Oh, but you know, we don't take it. I'm like, but that's really colonizer language.
Just because you don't take it that way doesn't mean everybody has to accept it.
Asian American person, you know, I'm not an Oriental rug, so I don't want to do an Oriental dance. And then it becomes like the Siamese, you know, or the certain problematic dances in like the Nutcracker. So it just gets this overlap.
Yeah.
So then now that everyone's not locked down with each other anymore, there's still people who are very swing towards more particular source countries. And then other more US-based dancers that are embracing more the use again of belly dance because the general public understands what that is.
Yeah.
You know, in different countries, it's called different things.
Yeah. Yeah. So tell me, you have a podcast, right? Dance, mm-hmm. Is it Dance to Heal is your podcast?
Yeah.
Amazing. Amazing. I'm going to definitely check on that. And do you have a book?
Yes. Yes. It's called Outside in Mastery, Dancing My Way Back to Myself After Breast Cancer. And it really dives into things that no one really talked about before my book came out. I gave a book away to someone in an anesthesian office and because her mom was going through cancer. And the feedback was her mom read the book and started crying and said, no one speaks about this like you do. And then the daughter read the book and started crying. Mom, I didn't know you felt this way.
Mm.
So it was really interesting, the feedback I got, because it really was a love story. It was a love letter to me before I got cancer. Like, I wish what I had known before I went into it. There's things like survivor guilt that we never really understood.
Yeah.
There's anger. Yeah. You know, this anger that you got cancer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? There is shock that happens. There's things like you don't trust your body anymore. You just don't realize it's actually your body not trusting you that you're dealing with.
Hmm.
It's both directions.
Wow, that's really interesting. I never heard somebody say that. Yeah.
Yeah, because I liked it for chemotherapy, which literally destroyed my body.
Right.
And my body's like, what the heck, boo-boo? Like, seriously?
Mm-hmm. Like, poison? Really? This is what we're doing?
Yeah, you just sat there and let yourself be poisoned 16 times over, and then they took out lymph nodes, which affected the ability for that whole right arm to clean itself out. You know, I have to really worry about swelling in my arms, you know, things like that. And my body was just kind of like in total shock and not understanding. And then me understanding, for a lot of us, we don't understand how much cumulative trauma affects disease in our bodies.
Yeah.
And then I realized during the pandemic, oh my gosh, I wrote this book for breast cancer survivors. It's actually for post-pandemic survivors.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Because we're all dealing with the same thing. Survivor guilt, anger, shock. We don't trust our bodies.
Yeah. It makes sense. You know,
and I was like, ooh, we got to talk about this more. So then we rebranded Dance to Heal to more of that life is a dance and you need all your tools.
Yeah. And you need to be able to react and you need to be able to be in the flow. I mean, there's so many metaphors that work for that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for talking with me today, Jenny. It was awesome. So fantastic.
You.
You're like hypnotic.
Thank you.
A little bit, yeah.
And Karen, I do want to invite your friends and your audience members. I do monthly masterclasses under Move to Bloom, MOVETOBLOOM. It's subsidized by a nonprofit. So that's why, like, I can afford to do it. And then they'll just start to get some of the tools that are offered in my Solara circle. Because, like, you gotta have to be in community sometimes. You can't do it alone. And also, it's we won't do things unless we're accountable. So if you're watching this muscle test, if you should do Move to Bloom, it's on every month. And I switch around days of the week so people can fit into their calendars.
That's important. That's so important. It's got so many cool things that I'm like, oh, sorry, already booked. Cool. Well, thanks so much for coming on today, Jenny.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Thanks for watching today. I'm glad you watched the whole thing. If you could do us a favor, it would help so much if you hit subscribe. It helps give us just a little boost to keep this podcast going. Thank you.